the moon was for the measurement of time and celebration and feasts. All their great feasts were at the full moon. And the moon, as you know, has four phases, from new moon to half moon to full moon to half moon and then new moon. Hence the month, the month, is a movement from the new moon to the new moon. And the 16th day of the month, in their way, is the full moon and all their festivals. So when the priests are celebrating creation, whether you've got to imagine all the music, the oboes and the lutes and the lyre and the harp and so on, and the music, the song, so you've got to picture all that. They sing in seven scenes this creation. Day is irrelevant. It's the seven stages of the development of this beautiful world. And we've seen four. One was light, and it was good. And then there was space, the firmament. And then there was the opening up of the seas and the earth and the stars and the moon and the sun. So now we move to the fifth scene of this poem, and it's about life. From cosmos to anthropos. From the beautiful cosmos to human beings. Genesis 1:20, God said, let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky. And God created great sea monsters and all things having a living soul which move, with which the waters teem, each of its kind, and everything flying on the wing, each of its kind. And God saw that it was very good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and increase and fill the waters in the seas, and let the flying things increase on the earth. And it was evening and morning, a fifth day. And now scene six. And God said, let the earth bring forth having a living soul, each of its kind, livestock, and creeping things, and wild animals, each of its kind. And since God said it, it was so. And God made the wild animals of every kind. And livestock of every kind. And all the things that creep on the soil, each of its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, here we come to the climax. God said, let us make Adam, human beings, in our own image and likeness. And let them rule over the fish in the sea and over the birds in the heavens and over the cattle and over the wild animals of the earth and over all the creeping things that creep over the earth. And God created humanity in his own image. In the image of God, he created humankind, male and female, God created them. So in what way were the poets, the priest poets, what did they mean when they said, we're made in the image and likeness of God? Well, here's four suggestions that the scholars come up with that may attract you. Firstly, we're able to communicate with God, to be in communion with God, their experience of prayer. They're able, so just as different species can relate to the of their own species, we somehow can relate to God. Secondly, we're made in the image of God because we're able to be God's instruments in giving life to others who can communicate with God. So human beings, male and female, he made them, are able to produce other human beings who can be in communion with God. So we're co-creators. Third suggestion, we're able, like God, to give ourselves in love to others. The whole of creation is an explosion of love from the divine. Everything is an expression of love. Gravity, the expanding universe, and we could go on. Well, we're able to give ourselves to others in love, just the way God does. And fourthly, we're sacred. God is sacred. So are we, human beings. Now, for all its inspired beauty, and I think you'll agree with me, it is beautiful material. For all of this, the portrait of human beings offered us in the book of Genesis is necessarily imperfect. Those who experienced Jesus tell us to look at him to see how God truly wants us to be. Paul writes, Adam, human beings, is a type of the one who was to come, Jesus. Jesus alone shows us what we're capable of as human beings, what we're meant to be. Again, Paul to the Corinthians, the first human being, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. There's some difficulty in reading the Hebrew text because Adam originally means human being, humanity. But once you have male and female, and we'll talk about that later, once that happens, unfortunately, Adam applies to the man. He's called Adam and she's called Eve. So when you read Adam, sometimes you're reading humanity, sometimes you're reading person. It's an image, of course, of the male Adam. But that's very secondary. Now we've got the animals, domestic and wild, and the snakes and all of that, and the birds, and the blessing now covers all of them together. There's not a separate blessing as on for the different categories of living creatures. We're all blessed together, man in with the animals and the birds and the rest, the fish. Genesis 1:28 reads, God blessed them, humanity and everything with a living soul. And he said to them, be fruitful and increase and fill the earth and make it subject to you. Rule over the fish of the sea. Now, a very common image for rulers in the Babylonian literature and in the Jewish literature is the shepherd. The shepherd is the ruler. So actually, rule over, unfortunately, we could read that as dominance, and many people do. So things are under human control. It's not meant to be that. It's meant to be the shepherd guiding the flock, guiding creation, continuing God's wonderful creation of bringing chaos into order. And that's our role. Rule them. Rule the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heaven and over all living things creeping on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given to you every seed-bearing plant which is on the face of the earth, and every fruit tree which bears seed in its fruit. For you they shall be for food. So all you vegetarians, you're right at the heart of it. That's all there. Animals become food after the, inverted commas, fall. But this is the way God wanted it to be. And so to every living thing on the earth, and to every bird in the heavens, and to everything that creeps over the earth, which has a living soul, I have given all grasses and plants for food. And it was so. And what a beautiful conclusion. God saw everything which God had made, that it was very good. It was evening and morning, a sixth day. Then, thus, the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their organized array, and God completed and put a stop on the seventh day to the work which God had done. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because on it he rested, Hebrew Shabbat, from all the work that he had done in creation. So they give us the impression that everything's stable, everything's as it should be, everything's in harmony, grass is there for the animals and human beings to eat, and there's perfect harmony in among the living creatures of the earth. God rested from all his work that he'd done in creation. Obviously, something else has to happen, because we're not living in a paradise, not entirely. I wonder why, and the authors will have something to tell us about that later. But this is all coming from the hand of God. And notice that the seventh day doesn't end. Every other day it was morning and evening, a fourth day, morning and evening, a fifth day, sixth day, seventh day. Everything is in the seventh day. Everything is under the blessing of God. We're still living in the seventh day with God. The fact that God ceases the work of creation accounts for the stability of the world. Others will see God as continuing creation, which is they're not contradictory, they're just different poetic insights into reality. In many of the ancient myths, the final work of the gods is creating the temple in Babylon or wherever, Ur of the Chaldees or Nineveh, the temple is the final, and that's where the king reigns, of course, and the stability of the country. Here in this text, it's not the temple that's the final creation, it's the Sabbath, the day of resting with God. Few further words on the Sabbath. The Sabbath became more and more important for Jewish self-identity. Special Sabbath temple sacrifices were instituted, and more importantly, this was the day when the people assembled for prayer in the synagogues. There's no temple in exile, and when they first came back, it was years before they managed to get the temple built again. So this synagogue became the important structure of faith. The Sabbath was a day consecrated to God, and its observance was symbolic of the commitment of the people to keep their part of the covenant. It was the most important commitment that we, the Jewish people, made to God as our part of the covenant, to keep the Sabbath holy. Book of Exodus chapter 31 reads, "You shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, given in order that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. Whoever does any work on it shall be cut off from among the people. Therefore the Israelites shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant." Isaiah chapter 58, written after the return from exile by the disciples, and they're writing here and they say, if you don't find any of this in Isaiah the prophet, and you don't find it in the exilic authors, but you do in the post-exilic authors when the new temple has been built. "If you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways and serving your own interests or pursuing your own affairs, then you shall take delight in the Lord." The last chapter of the book of Exodus deals with the setting up of the tabernacle, and it ends with these words, "Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting," the cloud of unknowing, the mystery cloud. The cloud that's full of light, but you can't see God. "The cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. In all the travels of the Israelites, whenever the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they would set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set out until the day it lifted." So this is discernment of wanting to do God's will, and God is leading them and guiding them through the desert. "So the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and fire was in the cloud by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel." And the most important book of the Old Testament, the book of Exodus, ends with these words, "So it was for every stage of their journey." And of course, so it is for us at every stage of our journey. Waiting on God, being led by God, discerning God's will, like Jesus wanting to do the will of God. Here in Genesis, the whole of time And so the whole of human history is lived out in the sacred presence of God. The final verse of the priestly document, chapter 2, verse 4, reads, "This is the story of the heavens and the earth when they were created." And the curtain falls over the first scene of the book of Genesis. The spirit of this opening poem is one of divine praise. The authors jealously guard the truth that the beginning of the creation is a mystery that's outside our comprehension. They avoid mythical attempts to substitute for the mystery. They leave it intact. They make no attempt to integrate the separation of light as the first work with the creation of the heavenly lights in the fourth work. They do not attempt to speak of the origin of the primeval deep, or to attempt to explain primeval darkness. That's just there. They don't attempt to explain it. They don't know how to explain it. Why is there evil and so on? It's just there. The idea of creation from nothing is not a biblical idea. It's a philosophical idea that has its value, but you don't find any of it in the Bible. Creation is seen as bringing order out of what is originally chaos. The world of human beings, the world and human beings are creatures and can be understood only in relation to the Creator. Hence, the world and we human beings are essentially mysterious. Genesis chapter 1 is put at the head of the biblical writings so that whoever edited it all and shaped the Torah and then the rest of the Bible, it's put at the head so that all the rest will be seen in its light. We'll always be aware of creation being very good. And I wonder if we've always been aware of that. Very good. The goal of this opening account is to establish a holy state for the whole of creation, a holy state realized in the faith and worship of Israel, God's chosen and holy people, keeping the Sabbath in the temple, worshipping and praising God.